Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Public File. My name is Kat Modrew. My guest for this part of The Public File program is Jim Morris. He is the communications manager for the California Rice Commission, and you guys, our minds are going to be blown by the information you hear in the next half hour. Nice to see you, Jim.
Oh, right back at you, Kat. Thanks for having me.
So talk about just sort of in a broad brush what the California Rice Commission is, and then we're going to get into the details of this organization that is that makes Northern California unique in so many different ways.
The Rice Commission has four primary areas that we work in. I do public education, helping people better understand the value of rice in California, which is immense. We also have conservation, regulation, and legislation areas. So it's a small staff. We're fully funded by our farms and our mills. And essentially, at the end of the day, we're hoping to help them continue in business as they've done for more than 100 years.
In this Northern California area, here's some of these are off your website. The California rice industry, California people, annually contributes $1.8 billion and 25,000 jobs to the state's economy. I don't think people realize that.
You're right. It's a continual education effort. People often associate the rice fields when they're flying southwest into the airport and they see, what are those lakes down there? Well, those are actually rice fields, 5 inches of water. And you're right, $1.8 billion in value for the crop. And when you expand it to the milling, the shipping, et cetera, it actually goes up to more than $5 billion every year for the state of California.
So what makes California's climate, Northern California, even more specifically, what's so special about this region for rice growing?
It is a great place to grow rice. We do get that question. People say, first of all, I didn't know we grew rice.
And then why?
Why? That's right. Well, because it's a world staple and we can do it very well here and efficiently. So it is Northern California. 97% of the 500,000 acres that we grow every year in California is in the Sacramento Valley.
Crazy.
So within 10 minutes of the state capital, you'll have rice fields and they will continue for about 100 miles until you reach the Chico and Willows areas. There are three reasons for rice doing so well here. First of all, we have heavy clay soils in the Sacramento Valley. It acts as a bathtub. It holds those 5 inches of water in place during the growing season. We also have a Mediterranean climate, which, by the way, helps for California being the number one ag state, growing more than 400 crops, so it does extend beyond rice. And we also have relatively abundant water. Rice does not use as much water as people think, but everything that grows needs water, and we have that standing water in the field. So you need the heavy clay soil, the good climate, and the relatively abundant water.
Is rice something that struggles like other crops do when we have droughts as we have had in Northern California? And were years like last year when we had so much water a blessing or a challenge also?
You're right. It's funny. People think California's weather is always perfect, and that's not the case. And rice has struggled with drought. We have had about 20% reductions in the severe drought years in terms of acreage. And that is reflective on the number of jobs, the impacts to the rural communities, Colusa, Marysville, Yuba City, et cetera, that are very dependent upon rice. Also, the less of a local food supply from that, and impacts on our environment, too, because those rice fields have valuable environmental impacts, too. So we have had reductions, and also when we have all the rain coming in, not necessarily at the best time, it has delayed our planting, and we've lost some of our acreage to that, too, and some of the production on the back end when we get to the fall. So it's great weather in California, but not always perfect.
Well, and what you said right now, I tip my hat, if I had one on, to farmers of all types, because it so much depends on things that you can't control. And there are so many families that you work with. Talk about the families that grow rice that, you know, not live and die literally, but figuratively by things that sometimes they can't control and yet continue to work in this industry.
Absolutely. So they have a lot of expertise. They have a lot of great equipment. They have a lot of know-how. They have the strength in knowing that they've been doing this for generations. The first commercial rice field in California was planted in 1908. But one thing they can't control is the weather. And so we've had some challenging years where, you know, you work the fields multiple times because you need to work the fields before the water goes in and then the rice seed goes down. And then lo and behold, you have to start all over again. Or you may have rain during the harvest period in the fall. And that could lead to a lot of mud and some lost production. So it's a real winning combination in California, but certainly far from perfect.
If you're just joining me, my guest is Jim Morris. He's the communications manager for the California Rice Commission. What makes California rice so special that you get to say the amount of sushi that incorporates California rice.
Yeah, it's virtually every grain of sushi rice is coming right here from the Sacramento Valley.
For the country?
Yes, absolutely. So if you're in New York City, Washington, D.C., and you're having a fancy sushi roll, it's going to be California rice. We say virtually because there's a slight chance that someone may bring in rice from Japan. But the thing is it's the same varieties. It's grown right here. So, yes, we grow virtually all of the rice. It's the right varieties, the excellent quality, and also you need to have consistent quality to meet the demands of the markets. And we actually ship rice to Japan. So about half of our rice is used domestically. We produce more than 4 billion with a B pounds of rice each and every year. And then about half of it is consumed internationally. Japan is our number one overseas market. They take up to 1 billion pounds each year.
From Northern California.
Yes, absolutely. So it's
that.
The quality and it's also the consistency. When you look at rice, it's different than, I think, than some of the other items. This is a staple food. Some countries, the people eat it 3 times a day.
Yeah.
The per capita consumption is hundreds of pounds a year. They really do rely on rice. It's affordable and it needs to be on those shelves consistently. And we can deliver that in California.
That's crazy to think about that. And we were also talking off the air. I would say it's been in the last 15, 20 years. I remember when Mikuni, Taro-san, had one sushi restaurant on Hazel Avenue and sushi was not very popular. Well, now you can drive down a main street and find 5 sushi restaurants, 6 sushi restaurants. So the sushi's gotten crazily popular. So you folks are busy.
Absolutely. And great ambassadors like Taro Arai of Mikuni, Billy No of Crew Restaurant. There's so many chefs that are very inventive and It's a great situation. I mean, that sushi connection is huge. It also helps us with our outreach to places like the California legislature because they can relate to that item.
And what do you have with the legislature to really get their hands sticky, if you will, and get a hands-on sort of celebration with the legislatures?
Yeah, so every year we have our Circle of Life competition and Capitol Roller. So we have members of the legislature, and it's ended up being very competitive. So they're rolling a California roll, and then the winner in the competition gets a framed samurai sword for the year and bragging rights in the state capitol. And I tell you, they eat this up with, I guess chopsticks would be the appropriate term, but they are really into it. I love to see it. And it's a great way for us to communicate the rice story in a way that people could relate to.
Well, now, do they get lessons on how to roll sushi rolls, or are they on their own until they get to the competition?
Well, it's
tutorials.
We can offer help to them if they're interested in it. And, you know, the great world of the internet, there's a lot of ways you can find out about it. But I think that they would tell you that it's different seeing a YouTube video, for example, and doing it yourself. Anyone, I think, can roll sushi, but to roll a nice sushi roll is a whole different story.
I did it once, and it ended up being like 6 inches fat and 2 inches wide. It looked like a giant puffed out Tootsie Roll. Never, wine may have been involved, but it's harder than you think.
I'll stay with Taro or Billy's sushi rolls if you don't mind.
I will join you on that one. Jim Morris is the communications manager for the California Rice Commission. One of the coolest things I learned when I first got to know your organization is the environmental aspect of those same rice fields in Northern California that give us all that rice for all these amazing meals and sushi. What is it? 230 wildlife species count on the rice fields.
Absolutely. And it is a great story. So decades ago, the rice fields were burned at the end of harvest. That was for disease control. Mm-hmm. There still is a little bit of that happening, but we have phased that down considerably.
I remember
and
that.
Now there's a shallow amount of water that goes in those fields. It's timed perfectly with the Pacific Flyway migration. And so you have millions of ducks and geese coming through the Sacramento Valley. More than 60% of their fall and winter diet comes directly from rice fields. It's primarily what we call the waste grain. So after harvest, there's a little bit of grain left over, about 300 pounds per acre. And it is a feast if you're a duck or a snow goose. And there are other things in rice fields that some of the other critters eat too, invertebrates, crayfish, et cetera. So it's a real full ecosystem, and we're able to deliver benefits. We look at it as we have two seasons in rice. The rice is grown in the spring and summer, harvested in the fall. We have a whole second season for wildlife. And those rice fields have essentially replaced the wetlands of generations ago. So that is a tremendous value for our environment.
And one of those crazy things of nature, the birds that are flying, I think it's this time of year, right?
Yes, absolutely.
They just know to stop here, right? I mean, no one told them.
Yeah, that's right. And it's funny because I have the great benefit of traveling the rice fields, and I was in the fields yesterday, and you see the same species in the same fields most every year. So I almost wonder, is it that next generation of family that's coming back to that same farm? But it's great to see. I mean, it's really thrilling. Your heart is pumping when you see tens of thousands of snow geese, for example, in a rice field, or bald eagles. We have three bald eagles that are in the Sacramento area. And believe me, they have plenty to eat. And we also have a threatened giant garter snake that is one of the species in rice fields. So it goes on and on. And now we're working possibly to help fish populations as well.
Talk about that. In your notes, early research into raising fish food and salmon in the rice fields.
Yeah, so that's two different things. Fish food is the rice fields have a lot of zooplankton that are very healthy for the salmon populations, which have been struggling in California. So we have farms that are, and we're working with UC Davis, Caltrout as well. And the goal is to get that fish food back into the river at the right time when the salmon are migrating through. This is all early work, but it's very encouraging. Also, we have second year of our salmon raising program, again with UC Davis and other partners. I was actually in hip waders in a field yesterday that in Knight's Landing area that's fascinating. And we put, I didn't, but we had the researchers, they put 2,000 fish into the rice fields, and they will be monitored, they will be chipped, and then they will be released. These will be healthier, much larger fish than you will find in the river.
What kind of fish?
They're salmon.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
And so the goal is, if it works out and they'll be tracked, if those salmon are healthy and can make it to the ocean, then the goal is down the road that there will be many rice fields in the winter that will be raising salmon and then releasing them. So we will be supplementing that wild population. And it's still early, but we're very optimistic about it. We're trying different things in those rice fields. I tell you, and I've seen rice fields many, many times, but I was kind of blown away. As I'm in the hip waders, there are these enclosures that the baby salmon are in mm-hmm. this rice field with a little bit of water in there. And then we also had Christmas trees, believe it or not, that were in the fields because they act as refugia, which is a way that those fish can kind of hide, if you will, from predators. So it was a pretty
wild scene
yesterday. But we are very optimistic that we can help. What we want is we want to be able to obviously continue to deliver America's sushi rice and those economic benefits. We want to continue to be the backbone of the Pacific Flyway with the millions of birds, and we want to be able to do that same thing for salmon populations as well. So fingers crossed for the future.
So I have a very random question, but it's here and it's coming out of my mouth. Does the salmon being in the water where the rice is grown change the flavor or the nature of the rice? Because it adds a new component to the water.
Well, it's a good question, and the answer is no.
Okay,
because
figured.
It is the off-season for growing rice.
Basically,
we start over every year. So what happens with growing of the rice is the fields are worked in March, the planting is in April and May. So once the salmon will be out before those fields are worked.
Okay.
So essentially we have a blank slate every year. That's the situation with the heavy clay soil. You can grow rice on there each year for over a century. And then the rice is loaded up into airplanes, believe it or not, which are going 100 miles an hour. They're GPS guided, about 160 pounds of rice seed per acre.
Wow.
And off and running we go. And about 5 months later, we'll get into harvest.
So the cycle is less than a year?
Yeah. So you're going to have the planting in the spring. It's going to grow in the summer. We'll harvest in the fall. We will be out by early November. And then so we have several months of the year where there's no rice growing, but they're actually tremendously valuable months. And California is a great state, but it's a complicated state.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of competition for resources. That's what happens when you have the number one ag state and the number one urban state. And we feel the more that we can do to help the environment, everybody wins.
Talk more about education and getting people to learn more about that. I was, like I said, I've been doing these public affairs shows and lived here for my entire life, and I was blown away by the information on your website. But your outreach is pretty all-encompassing. You really try to get the word out for a lot of reasons.
It's incredibly important, and it's also an honor and a privilege to be able to do that, too, because it's a great story.
Mm-hmm.
So our website's calrice.org, and we have all the complement of social media pages, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And we're fortunate that they're continuing to grow. We became involved in social media 10 years ago with farmers doing blogs, et cetera. It was a very slow growth time, but fortunately we've stayed with it. And it's funny, the public is very, very receptive. And when they have questions, they really truly want to know more about where their food comes from and the different practices. I always tell the growers and others, it may be a mundane thing for you to talk about this, but for somebody from the city,
right?
It is really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to go out of our way to show each and every step that we can. And we just started 6 months ago our podcast, which is called Ingrained.
Which I love just so much, Ingrained.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's a more in-depth look at the subjects, and we've had a great start to it, and it's a learning process, as
mm-hmm.
you know, with
yep.
your great podcast as well. But we're having a lot of fun with it. And so that's also available on the website, or you can go to podcast.calrice.org, and we would love to have people subscribe.
You've got some great videos on your website as well. Some are shorter, some are longer. Just depends on you know the information you want to get, but they're very well made. Do you get out to schools? How do you get the word out to youngsters? Because you make those rice lovers and farmers early on, I would think.
Yes, absolutely. It all helps from mm-hmm. the early levels all the way through. And so we do try to work with schools as often as we can. We have one item in particular that is very popular in the classrooms, and it's how rice grows. And it's simply a one-page sheet describing a year in a rice field. And I think that getting those basics across is really important to kids. A lot of people, not necessarily even the youngsters, but the older people too, the common response would be, well, I get my food from Safeway or something
mm-hmm.
like that. And there's a lot more that goes into it than that. So I think we all benefit the more that knowledge sinks in. So we do what we can to communicate that story to anyone and everyone.
And we were talking farm to fork earlier in a different meeting. And, you know, this is one of those farm to fork items from Northern California. You think of tomatoes and lettuce and this and that if you go to New York, the packages of tomatoes are sourced from this area. Well, how about all that sushi and all that rice?
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't get more local than that. People are really surprised when they make the connection and they see that it's a rice field. Wow, this is like just a few minutes out from downtown Sacramento. And we enjoy the Farm to Fork Festival. It's a great opportunity
mm-hmm.
to reach a lot of people. Although I may say for us, it's farm to chopsticks, but you can also use a fork. I mean, there's a lot of different things you
can
do
right.
with rice, but they're all great opportunities that we work with chefs on that and other things. And it's just great to be able to talk with people about this story.
And the chefs locally, you mentioned a couple of them, but they are all about sourcing locally, whether it's rice or other produce. And, you know, they have this bevy of rice, you know, in their own backyard, quite literally.
Absolutely. And Patrick Mulvaney,
yes.
other chefs we work with very frequently, and they're very interested in knowing more. They know they have a relationship with the farmers. They know them by name. By the way, we have about 2,000 family farmers
it's
growing
amazing.
Rice in California. So all of those connections really help. And when you talk about farm to fork, it doesn't get any closer to a connection than rice, since we're just outside of the state capital. And unlike some of the other crops that may be grown more statewide, we really are in a Sacramento Valley crop. There's one moderate-sized farm in the San Joaquin Valley, but that is essentially is about it. Everything is north of Sacramento, so it's a very localized industry.
That's amazing. A couple of rice questions before we go. Do you freeze rice? How long does rice last, and what's the best way to keep it if you have a big bag of it?
Great questions. Well, first of all, we do get that question a lot about what's the best way to prepare rice. So we'll start with that.
Start
rice
with that.
Cookers are great.
Uh-huh.
Some people still do stovetop. There's nothing wrong with that.
Uh-huh.
But rice cookers are phenomenal, and they're so easy. Rice is a very forgivable crop, if you will. You certainly don't want, you know, a lot of heat or direct sunlight on it, particularly if you're talking about brown rice, because brown rice has about half the shelf life of white rice. I would recommend your refrigerator for that.
Okay.
For white rice, you can easily store it in your cupboard for a very long period of time, well over a year, probably 2 years.
Good to know.
And that is, I think, one of the reasons that rice is so important in the world. It's the most consumed grain in the world. And I think it's one of the reasons is not only the tradition of it, but the fact that it is low cost and it can be stored so easily.
Without refrigeration, without any special care.
Absolutely.
To it. Mm-hmm. What was my other question? Do you have a favorite rice dish? Doing what you do.
You know, it's funny, since I've been with the Rice Commission for 12 years, our family seems to be eating more rice these days.
How about that?
But we always had rice, and we've advanced from that starchy side dish to using it in other applications. My favorite dish of rice ever is in Maui. And by the way, in Maui, they use all California rice there.
Oh, I love this.
My wife gives me no end of grief because I want to go to the Kmart and the CVS and all, Costco, and I want to see all those big bags of California rice. And she wants to be on the beach. She's the smart one. But there's a great, it's called the Gazebo is the name of the restaurant, and they have a fried rice that is absolutely to die for. I'm salivating just thinking about it. So that's my favorite rice dish. But Rice Krispie Treats, I mean, you know, it's really endless.
You know, you forget that that's rice.
Absolutely.
Quite honestly.
Yeah, rice is used in so many different things. Risotto, paella, rice bowls, pet food. Rice straw is used for wattles, which helps with erosion control. So there's a lot of different uses for rice, more than meet the eye.
And it's a $1.8 billion industry here in Northern California. Pretty amazing. Jim Morris, if people want more information, give the website again and a little bit of what they might find on a very extensive website to just poke around and learn more about rice here in Northern California and the world.
calrice.org, calrice.org, and we have hundreds of high-def videos, everything from harvest. We have farmer blogs. We have recipes. We have one new recipe a month, maybe more sometimes.
Yes.
So there's some preparation that we can all, you know, get into, different techniques, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
And then we also have all those magnificent wildlife videos. And we will have a lot of salmon photos and videos, too, for people who want to know more about that exciting research we're doing.
Fantastic. What a great interview. Jim Morris, Communications Manager for the California Rice Commission. Thanks for coming in, and thanks for what you do.
Oh, thank you.